This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is my Wardrobe Malfunction podcast, where each week I start talking to a very special guest about their relationship with clothes. But we end up skidding off track into all sorts of fascinating territory. If you've joined us before, forgive me for banging on about it, but for those coming to us new, there are now 33 episodes to find, download, and share with the rest of the world. They include chats with Michelle Visage, Reverend Richard Coles, oh, I love him, Steph McGovern, Nile Rodgers, Nicola Benedetti, and even this lady, who you've probably never heard of, she's got a very odd name, Trini. But let's get on to today's guest. He's so adored that he has not one, but two shows named after him. He's the absolutely divine Jeremy Vine. When not cycling between Channel 5 and Radio 2, he also somehow found time to write a new novel called The Diver and the Lover. Is there anything that this man cannot do? Just a quick warning about the sound, however. We had a slight technical issue, which means my audio sounds like I'm speaking from the back of my wardrobe, so apologies for that. Jeremy's voice is thankfully as clear and as silky as ever. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. So, this is quite unusual for me to interview someone who I've only met being interviewed by, and part of that was on a bicycle, my least favourite mode of transport. Of course, it's Jeremy Vine, cyclist, lover, and kind of champion, and of course, Jeremy Vine Show, and the Radio 2 Show, which you've been doing for how many years? 17 years or something ridiculous.
Wait a minute, let me think, because I was about 27. No, hang on. It was 2003, January the 6th. No, I was
27. You're such a filthy liar.
I was 38. And the funny thing was that the legendary guy who took over from me was called Jimmy Young, and he was 44 years older than me. And that's an incredible thing. So he was doing it live for 2 hours a day at the age when my granny was in a nursing home. I still find that incredible.
I mean, he was 88. It was astonishing. How did he find it when he was finally, probably very politely, asked to, his time was up?
Oh, I don't think he was happy. He brought lawyers in. I mean, we're back in the day here. Because I think, at the time I thought, oh, what a silly thing to think you could stop the station moving you on. Now I'm doing his job, because I think, well, hey, how dare they? All presenters, all the end, we all end up thinking the managers only do heating and lighting, and then suddenly they come and say, sorry, we want someone else to do this job.
Can't believe it.
Yeah, but has that ever happened to you? Anything like that? You've never been
bounced, being bounced, or of course. I think it's happened to everybody. You know, I did Crime Watch, for example, and then, in fact, actually, what the thing about Crime Watch, which was, I should have read this better, but I didn't realize it was basically on its last legs, and they thought they'd give it one more year and see if they could change it. And I should have realised it was one more year instead of thinking, because what they don't say it's one more year. They say this is a big moment for you, Jeremy, you know. And in fact, to be honest with you, I don't regret it, because I've always wanted to do Good Evening and that music. Dun, 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 and then Don't Have Nightmares and all that. Yeah, so I that was an ambition. But then it's always painful. You never want to be on bounced off a show. I mean, for goodness sake. But it happens to all of us with everything in the end.
Yep, happens to all of us. And did you wear, because you are known, Jeremy, and you know this is the obvious question for you. You always wear really bright clothes, well, shirts in particular. And I was sort of wondering, where have you always been like that? Have you always been drawn to colour and flamboyance?
No, I've started a little bit, Susanna, on TV actually doing that, and it's I don't, I mean, I always think people who wear bright shirts are people who don't actually have a natural personality and are trying to make up for it with colour from others. So I'm absolutely busted on that. I think people who are very expressive and confident in themselves, as I'm not, they just wear light blue. But I go for a lot of floral designs, and I'm under attack at home at the moment because I've bought a load. And I'm tend to be home a bit later than my wife at the moment, and they've already sorted through what I've bought, and so by the time I come home, I'm already getting the piss taken out of me for what have you got now, you know?
And well, where did you get them from?
I'll tell you where I found a place, and I pay full price. So let me say that Hawes and Curtis online, and ask for a high collar, and I go medium slim fit shirt. And you can get some really extraordinary designs. They're brilliant.
High collar is good for you because you've got a long neck.
It's not so much that. It's the. I mean, a number of things have happened in our society where we should have had a full referendum and we didn't. One of them is the way that they dropped the alcohol units allowed weekly from 21 to 14. No consultation at all. And the other one is where they, you know, suddenly ties went out. And all blokes were left with office shirts, and I'm sort of demonstrating to this usually on our Zoom call here, office shirts which were really low and small and without a tie, you've got nothing going on. So we need to all switch to higher collars. It's a big... Oh, what's that?
That's Mr. Chow. He's bright. You like him. He's bright.
I love that.
Yeah.
I literally... that because I looked down and then I looked up, the budgie appeared in your hair in between
in my hair. Way,
and I thought you were doing magic.
No, sorry, I interrupted your collar moment.
I have got a shirt story, which is this. Round the corner from the BBC, there was a shop in Conduit Street called Inferno, bizarrely, Inferno 9, right? And I discovered them, and this is about 20 years ago. And I still
Inferno 9, sounds like a sex shop.
I know, I don't know what the actual basis of it was, but it sold shirts with not just collars. These were proper Harry Hill massive collars. And I got really addicted. And everyone was asking me where you got your shirts from. And I used to go in this shop. They were very expensive, about, you know, £90 each or something. So at some point, I felt so at home in this shop that some customers mistook me for one of the sales staff and were asking about these shirts. And I started helping them because I got completely into character. And I said, you know, well, this one here is a really nice shirt. And then the actual sales staff came along and told me off. They said, excuse me, this man doesn't work here. And I really felt humiliated, and I never went back. And it went past about 6 months later, and I thought, the curse, Lady of Shalott, the curse has come upon them, you know? You can't. I was a brilliant customer, and they treated me badly.
Okay, well, we have to find another store for you to...
Well, this online one's working well. Are you not happy with it, the colours?
No, for you to actually go and sell. I think you'd be a brilliant salesman.
I'd love to be. I think selling is all about time taken, and you need to not be rushed, and you need to... I tell you who I interviewed the other day. You'll love this guy. You'll know him. Paul Smith.
Yeah, amazing.
And he's worth $70 million and has time for everyone. And he said when he started off, what he realized as a salesperson, he was in a very nasty, unpleasant, small room with no windows. And he realized that customers don't want to come in and straight away talk about what they want to buy. They want to talk about something else. So he had a couple of interesting objects on the desk. One was a penknife from Paris. And then there was a very old map. And he would always start the conversations about those things first. And then he could make the sale.
That's very smart. Well, you as a frustrated salesman, we're going to have to find a little opening for you in a boutique that's struggling right now. But again, going back to colours, because your brother Tim, who's a brilliant comedian, he loves bright colours too. So it must be a family thing, surely.
But what's the alternative? I mean, it seems to me, you know, if you haven't got bright colours, you've got John Major. So I don't see all day. I mean, it's true. I think for years, blokes have struggled with flannel, you know, with greyness. And we've suddenly been allowed to break out. And of course, previously, the bright colour would all be in the tie. So you'd have the Jon Snow tie. And that would be the tiny expression.
That is exactly it. That is spot on. It's because the tie, there's no need for a tie anymore. It's resorting to brightly coloured shirts, which I think are great. It's like my husband wears brightly coloured shirts too, and I love it. My son does as well, and I love them. But I
want to be clear, in case anyone misunderstands, I would draw the line at red trousers. I think anyone who wears a pair of red trousers should be arrested.
I agree.
Yeah,
I totally agree. My husband did buy some, and they mysteriously disappeared. So, I mean, do you have any? You clearly love clothes, and I love that about you. And but did you have any sort of style icons when you were growing up?
I don't feel I do love clothes because, I mean, when I was young, I just looked like Leo Sayer. My mum saw him on Top of the Pops and
a tartan.
I don't know. She just bought me one shirt and I wore it until the arms fell off. So I did. Honestly, there's no clothing gene. It's only meeting people like you I realise how important it is. But in terms of style icons, I would say as a sort of wilting teenage, unconfident, unblokey boy, obviously it was Bowie, because Bowie was somebody who, and I mustn't cry when I talk about him because how on earth he died in his 60s, I've got no idea. But he was somebody who was so unusual that I thought, oh my goodness, you don't actually have to be like everybody else. The school I went to, it really was like that play, Good and Bad at Games. If you were not good at games or rugby or whatever, you were worth less than a small piece of fluff on the floor. So we were all a bit traumatized. They were the jocks, we were the nerds. The nerds then went out and got jobs in broadcasting to make up for it. So Bowie was the nerd leader.
Yeah, he's well, look, I've got my Bowie
Aladdin
strike. Yeah, Aladdin Sane. There you go. But I know, I agree that with Bowie. And it's interesting, so many people having done this podcast, male and female, quote Bowie as being their icon. So,
really? Okay, let me just think. Yeah. I do think as well, God, I just love, if you get me onto Music Will Never Stop, but in 1972, they had the first album from Roxy Music came out. And so it was Brian Ferry, Brian Eno. Ferry needed Eno. Eno was very unconventional, and Ferry turned out to be very conventional. So when Eno left, the whole thing went wrong. But that lot, if you look at that first Gatefold album, the costumes they're in are extraordinary, you know. So again, it was...
That was all Anthony Price, wasn't it, who designed their clothes?
Was it? Was it?
Yeah, it was all the velvet suits and everything. And they were quite... they were quite feminine in a way. It's like,
for sure.
You looked at them, and I looked at them, and I looked at Brian Ferry, he was one of my icons, is one of my icons. And I would think I could wear that too. And the same with Bowie. I'd look at him and I go, okay, I could wear that.
Yeah, the trouble with old Brian Ferry is somebody said to me, who'd been his tour manager, they said, this guy's been famous for so long that he's not got any sense anymore of what it's like to be normal. So he said he got a call from him. He was in Tokyo, Ferry, and he calls, hello, how do I turn the heating down in a hotel room? And this, the tour manager's in London, Ferry's on holiday in Tokyo. He says, go to the wall, and there'll be a little thermostat, Brian, and you just turn it. I can't find the thermostat. So,
oh my
yes,
God.
I know, it's another world.
Yeah, it's another world, Jeremy. It is another world, and one, thankfully, we don't have to inhabit. Now it's even worse. But talking about your obsession with music, you had your band, the Flared Generation.
Correct. How nice. It's so amazing to see you say those words. That's an incredible thrill for me.
The Flared Generation. Did that come from the trouser?
Yes, it was very much the trouser.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the idea was we tried very earnestly and hard as teenagers to become very famous doing bands. And we modelled ourselves, this is probably early 80s, on the bands that were famous at the time, as you always do. So we tried to be the Jam. And no one's going to be as good as the Jam. So we just, and all band, by the way, everyone who was 15 in 1980 was trying to be Paul Weller. Yeah. There's no question. He was the coolest person. And then I just thought maybe we should flip it and we should do something that's really uncool. And it was just a silly idea at a weekend, but we got some of our parents' trousers and we put extra insets into them. So the flare was mine, I think the diameter was 43 inches.
Oh,
and they had actually got a stopping distance of about 3 yards, you know. And we posed for this picture and we said, we're now only releasing songs about flared trousers. And this thing went in the local paper that Cheam produces the world's most unfashionable punk band. And then it went completely crazy. And I suppose it's a great lesson about news that news is man bites dog. So having a cool band like the Jam, you're never going to get arrested. But if you have the most unfashionable punk band in the country and you're all wearing flared trousers, we got on Radio 1, we had the 6 o'clock show come down and interview us. It was all, and we thought we were famous, of course, but then it only lasts 6 minutes. So in a way, it was a tragic lesson.
But is there any of that music out there that we can listen to now?
This, I think we've got some tape somewhere. It was all very badly recorded. But the behind it was my brother, because my brother has an incredible musical composition thing. So he can play drums and bass and guitar and keyboards. So he was able to write 10 songs just like that. So we actually had a sort of set list, but they were all about flared trousers and other unfashionable items of clothing. We had a song called Sensible Shoes. We had a song called University Sweatshirts. We basically, all our songs were about things that you wouldn't be seen dead in.
So by being called the most unfashionable punk band, you basically got what you wanted, didn't you? Because that's the image you were creating. So you were given the correct title.
Yeah, I mean, what I learned was that news always does the thing that's the opposite of what you expect. And I suppose it was a lesson about news. But in the end, I mean, it's funny looking back on it. And we had so much attention from the local papers. Every week we would have we got a new female singer, then we've sacked her, then we've got a new bass player, then we've sacked him. But in the end, I suppose that's the media environment we're in now. And it seems a bit silly to me, but that's just because I'm grown up now and I wasn't then. Then it was brilliant.
Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? You've got to live the moment. And
it was so much fun. Yeah. We had the worst thing we had, because we obviously had to start playing live. And, you know, I won't say we weren't ready for that, but I can play drums and my brother played guitar. But we put the guy on drums who was the singer, and he couldn't play the drums very well, and that went wrong. So I said, okay, I'll do drums. Tim, my brother, does guitar, and the other guy, Simon, known as Wilmer, would sing. And we got to this gig in Durham, and we'd given it I edited the student newspaper, so I'd given it a lot of publicity. And back in the day, people didn't have phones they could be on all night, so they had to go to things. So this place was absolutely packed where we were playing. And the idea was, I'm going to come out and I'm going to start a rhythm on the drum kit. And then the other two will come out and join in one at a time, right? And they just took forever to come out. It must have been 5 or 6 minutes. And apparently what had happened was that they'd been dressing somewhere they weren't allowed to be, and a cleaner had arrived and started asking them, what are you doing here? And they'd forgotten. So it was absolute. So I said, where are you guys? Come on, you know. And then they got in a door. Yeah. So anyway, the whole thing was brilliantly chaotic. I'm loving that bird that keeps, it's not roosting, isn't the word, is it?
No, but I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but that part of me always sort of, when I had during the proper lockdown, my hair, I didn't wash my hair for 6 weeks and it became almost dreadlocky. And I was thinking, if it's a girl, how nice it would be if it created a little nest in my hair and laid an egg.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, blokes and their... You could do a whole podcast on hair, because men... The hair apartheid is happening now. Because what happens is women, friends of mine, are just so upset about having had no hairdressing. My mum's hair has grown outwards. She's having to find a different room for it now.
She's become Leo Thayer.
Oh, completely. Whereas me, it's 3 minutes in the morning, you know, and I'm sort of larging it up, saying, okay, now we see hair loss is actually, you know, quite a cool thing, everyone.
How do you feel about beards, by the way, on men?
I want them to be controlled. And I think the key worry about beards is that they've been appropriated by hipsters. And one of the
issues... Or hipsters.
Yeah, one of the issues we've got on Radio 2 is hipsters keep creeping into stories when we're not ready for them. So we had a story the other day about the upsurge in milk bottle deliveries, people ordering milk in bottles. And it turns out it's all in Shoreditch. So it's not really a real thing. It's just that lot.
Yeah, that lot with the bearded ladies. Because none of them are actually, in my experience, I'm sure that's not the case, but the majority of men who wear beards are sort of trying to, it's a bit like driving a Ferrari, you know, it's a bit of a midlife crisis thing, but it's happening to younger men, and it kind of, I think it sort of adds to their testosterone more than a fashionable appeal.
How interesting. I mean, when I was at university in Durham in the 80s, there were I think it was 6,000 students, is that right? Yeah, it probably was. And I think only 3 of them had beards, and one of them had a problem with alcohol. So obviously he wasn't necessarily in control of the agenda. And It's really amazing to me that there was so little beard wearing. And I think if I went back 30 years, I probably would have decided to sport a beard. Somebody the other day, it's here still, but they gave me some moustache waxes. I mean, is that a thing? Someone gave me
the idea.
Why were you like
Poirot?
But why would they give that to you?
It was a gift from somebody. I think I was interviewing them, and it was probably, again, another hipster who crept into a story somehow. And on the way out the studio, this is in the days when we were allowed to actually physically be in the same room, he gave me some and said, you might find this helpful. I thought, well, do you think I've got a moustache? Yeah.
I think I probably need it more than you. I've probably got more little cracking hairs than you have. But you could use it on your flyaway eyebrows, maybe.
Yeah, well, I haven't thought of getting a beard. I credit to hipsters. Good luck to them. I love it when there's a style fashion thing. There was a picture of a guy on the tube a while back. He had a very long brown beard. He was about 25. He was wearing a lycra top. He wore normal shorts and then very long, colourful socks with the word meat on them in capital letters. And he was carrying a leather briefcase. And someone said, that's the hipster look. That's it. He's got the whole thing.
I love that you noticed that. In such detail.
I kept the photo.
You took it all in.
Oh, yeah. And then there was a thing in The Guardian that said the key extra issue is if you open the case, there's only one thing in it, and it's a Japanese novel. That's the key thing. And then you're a hipster.
Oh, my goodness. So you go, but that was on the tube, was it? So you weren't on your bike?
No, that was a photo taken on the tube, not by me.
Okay, not by you.
I'll try and find it and send it to you, because it's a classic.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. It's brilliant.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So your day, Jeremy, you get up at some ungodly hour. What is it? Kind of 4:30 or something?
4:42, yeah.
So do you the night before? Because you've got to go, you've got to do the Jeremy Vine show on Channel 5, and then you've got to do your Radio 2 show. So that's, even for a woman who's used to doing 5 changes a day, for you are the male Lady Gaga. I mean, how do you deal with that?
I don't see it like that, because the most stressful thing for a broadcaster, as you and I both know, is not having a microphone or a red light. So the more microphones, the better. I love the news thing as well. Today, for example, we did a whole thing on
how do you dress for it. Yeah, how
so
do you in the, do you lay it all out the night before?
Okay. This morning I got up.
Cycling.
Yeah.
It's got to be presentable.
I know.
Well, and then you've got to be comfy cozy on radio.
Oh dear. Because today will be a really good example of how it can go wrong. Because I get up. The weather reports at the moment are very inaccurate. I wear some blue chinos, and I'm going to show you. There they are, right? I put those on. Okay.
Yeah.
And I then wore, believe it or not, a slightly lycra t-shirt. Let's just pass over that. This blue jacket. I then go outside to unlock my bike, and I remember that actually I can't use it today because I've got to pick one up from the shop down the road from here in a minute or 20 minutes. And therefore, I think I'm going to get one of those electric line bikes which are on the street. So it's pouring with rain. I put my Mac on, which doesn't help. I then put, this is terrible to say this to you because you're going to just go mad. I put on waterproof trousers with bicycle clips around the bottom of them.
I know. You caught me on the worst day.
No.
I then discover the Lime bike isn't at my end of the road. It's across the A4. So I have to go under the subway. And in doing that, I drop a glove. So once I've got the bike, I have to cycle back for it. I then get absolutely sopping wet on my journey to Channel 5, 7 miles. Channel 5 ITN building, which you know. And then I then have to find new socks because my socks are wet. So it was a catastrophe this morning. And I don't know if there's any way, Susanna Constantine, of actually being in the rain and fashionable because I haven't found it. I think the rain...
No, you know what? There isn't. And especially if you're on your bicycle. So you've got to let go of that. So you are totally forgiven. And I'm sorry you dropped your glove. But do you wear the same clothes all day in your working day? So do you wear what you're wearing on your TV show, on your radio show?
Quite often I come in, I've got a lot of suits in the cupboard at ITN Productions, which makes the Channel 5 show. And then I'll change into a suit and then change back into the clothes. I cycled in, and then I go to Radio 2 and I that stuff. But I do, when I get home at 3 o'clock or whatever, if I get home in good time, I will get straight in the shower. I mean, I think, you know, that's quite important. So I don't ever feel, I think the Channel 5, because I'm visual, I do think about what I'm wearing. So that's why you very kindly noticed the shirts. And then I do have suits and I might, certainly this morning, actually, funny enough, I did just wear those trousers that I'm showing you there, those chinos.
Again, was,
yeah. I'm sorry, it's probably not a very glamorous angle there.
Yeah.
And, but yes, but then
you want to show the chinos one more
time. Can I just do that one more time?
So I'm just one more time.
Can I just stress that is the lower half of my leg?
Okay.
Lovely chinos.
What's your view on a chino?
I like a chino. I like a chino if they're flat fronted and they've got pockets that you can, you know, at the side of your hip that you can put in, and they're not too skinny. I hate chinos that are like jeans, but in chino material.
Right.
So what are you wearing? Are you wearing chinos like that? You are,
afraid,
aren't you?
Yes, I'm not
going to
show them
again. On you.
No, I'm not going to. But I had a thing the other day because the rain is really causing me a problem with my clothing and everything because of my cycling. And I had one the other day where I started cycling. It wasn't raining. And again, the forecaster said no rain. So what's going on with the weather? They're all ill or what? The weather forecasters. And I cycle in and I get hit by more rain than I've ever even imagined. Right. It was like a Stephen King film or something. And when I get into work, I need to put other jeans on because I can't even attend the meeting. I'm so wet. And I go down and I remember that I have another pair of trousers. But the reason they're in the office is that they are so bad, my family said they could never be in the house. So these were actually Japanese imports of my inner hipster. They were too short for me, very wide, and they had about 8 or 9 different patches on them. So you can visualize that. So I looked like the American
Leo Sayer
or Carpenter Gothic, you know, that the painting of the guy with the pitchfork.
Yes.
And everyone was just laughing and laughing at these trousers, you know.
Yeah. Well, you have a
I need you to sort this out, Susanna.
You know what, Jeremy? I would so happily do that. But I don't really care too much about what happens to you on your bicycle, other than you stay safe. Because you know my feelings on bicycles and cyclists, because I came on your show, because they slightly irritate me.
I remember you came on the show to apologise for something and you ended up making it even worse. But I
can't even
remember what
it
was. It's all forgiven.
You know what? You've always got to be honest and outspoken in life.
I love that.
You've got to tell the truth. You know, I'm not going to pander. But anyway.
And all of viewers agreed with you. I remember. I couldn't. They agree with every word.
Yeah, poor Jeremy. But Jeremy, how much? Because I look at my husband. My husband is an exception, because actually he goes cycling in swimming trunks when it's raining, literally.
Wow.
And but the people who he cycles with, they spend so much money on these bloody clothes. Are you the same? Do you spend a fortune on your cycling
gear? I don't even have a register for that at all. I mean, I use my bicycle to get to work, and the reason I do that is because the journey from Channel 5 to Radio 2 today, because of this slight glitch with my bike at the bike shop, I had to do by car. It took 36 minutes. When I do it by bike, every day it takes 11 minutes. Every single day, 11 minutes. So it's just function. So where people are spending their money, I've got no... What is he buying with all that money?
Well, he doesn't. It's other people. He's in his swimming trunk.
Oh, I
see.
His
kind of old Abercrombie & Fitch t-shirt, which belonged to his son. But I just don't know. I don't know. But then you're not the kind of cyclist who clogs up country roads, are you, in packs?
No, I mean, that is an ambition, but I haven't got that far yet.
No, is it really an ambition?
Well, I think I would like... I do I've decided, oh, here we go, we're going to disagree now. I've decided that while on the road, I will assert my presence. I think it's better than being constantly...
For safety.
Oh, yes.
That's all, yeah.
No, I don't want to slow tractors down.
No, okay, we'll leave it. You won't. That's not a cop.
You can just see. Okay. I can just see it kindling the argument here.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's not.
Let's not go there.
I will call for your husband if you do that.
Yeah. Well, he's. Yeah. He's. He'll agree with you. That's another story. Yeah, he will agree with you. But do you have? So, do you have? Is that? I don't imagine you do actually. But do you have a piece of clothing that you would call a comfort blanket?
Yes. Can I show you?
Just a second.
I want to look. I'm just. Let me just, you can hear that.
Oh my God. What
I'm doing, I'm not.
Taking off those chinos.
No, I'm taking off my belt because I would like to praise this belt. Now this, it goes, so I'm just holding it up here. And what this belt does that's revolutionary.
Oh, I see it.
Okay, there it is. Why do you think that belt is special?
Well, it looks totally unspecial, but I'm.
Well, I'll tell you why.
The fastening. It's the fastening, and it's got a magnet in there.
No, it's a magnet would be good. What it's got, Susanna, is, and have a listen.
It's got a ratchet. It sounds like a bicycle. It sounds like a bicycle chain.
No,
that's why you love it.
No,
we're moving away now. Fashionable men are moving away from holes in the belt. The idea of a belt buckle and a hole, right?
Yeah, in because, the belt, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, well, yeah. So this, can you see that? It ratchets.
Okay.
So I like to wear this wherever I am, really, unless I'm swimming. So that, like, can you see? So you can adjust it according to your... It's lovely. So it can go in and then you release it. And then you can go out, and that's a belt.
Is that quite a new acquisition?
I don't know. I got it off Amazon. There we are. Look, that's what it looks like. No one would know, looking at that it's such an important thing.
But did you find it by accident on Amazon?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I had a problem where that thing with the belt buckle eventually wears the hole out and stuff. And I thought, I'm going to have to get a new belt. And usually a guy should only need to buy a belt once every 12 or 13 years. So I go online to have a look and I find this. And it's got a load of reviews of people saying this changed my life. Now, what it means is that if you can adjust it during the day... I'm not selling it to you.
I'm trying to stay awake. Keep going.
It's function. I know it's function, right?
I know. It's such a boy thing. It's such a
listen
man
to
thing.
That. Yeah.
So dull, yeah. No, I do love the sound, and I can understand why that gives you hours of pleasure.
That's a comfort blanket.
Yeah, I'm very happy for you. Okay, so that's your comfort blanket.
If you tighten it in front of people, it does make a sinister clicking noise.
And they think you've got an
artificial hip.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But ratchet is such a good word, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I didn't even know what it is.
Certain words, ratchet. I think a ratchet only goes one way, doesn't it?
No idea. Absolutely no idea. But you've got two teenage daughters.
Yes.
Is that right? And what do they think about the way you dress? Or do they? Oh, we know they've edited your floor shirt, and they hate your Leo trousers.
I don't think it's personal to the dress. I think they're embarrassed by everything at the moment. They're just in that phase. Eat if you say anything while eating, it's please close your mouth while you're eating. Have you been through that stage? I'm sure you have. So
yeah.
So they one thing that is actually a solace is that the really fashionable thing now for, and they're 13 and 16, is that they wear old band t-shirts.
Yeah.
So my daughter went to school yesterday in a t-shirt that said AC/DC. And then she said, have you got any others? I said, have I got any others? I'll buy, listen.
Stardust.
Yeah. Led Zepp. So you can have as many as you want. So that's fantastic. But I think I'm worried it's ironic.
No, I don't think it is actually, because my daughters are the same. They love those, and it's for them. It's not ironic, and they actually love that music anyway, almost more than I do. But so have you had a wardrobe malfunction, Jeremy?
Yeah, this is a bit of an interesting insight into my kind of university days. I was invited to a dinner party when I arrived at university, and it was Durham in the 80s, quite a lot of posh people there. And I made friends with some of the posh people, and I'm not very posh myself. And they said it's black tie. And I thought, okay, I can do that because I definitely have a black tie. And I turned up just wearing obviously other clothes, but just wearing a black tie. And then they were all in bow ties. And I thought, these people are obviously living differently. I didn't know. So I was 18. I would never have known what black tie meant, you know.
You are making that up.
No, not at all. Why would an 18-year-old know what black tie means?
You just made that up.
I didn't.
I haven't had a wardrobe malfunction. Your father must have worn a black tie.
Not once. Not, no, kind of middle class team. You wouldn't get that. There wasn't anything like that going on. I mean, the thing, not only have I not made it up, the joy of that is I've never told anyone that before, because I haven't even told my wife. Because when you mentioned wardrobe malfunction, I had to really think, and I thought, actually, I felt really socially awkward that I made that mistake. You know, now I think actually it speaks quite well of me.
I think it's great, yeah. But, yeah, made up story. Okay, so let's go on to something that's real, which is your new book, your new novel, The Diver and the Lover. I'm so interested about the premise of this, that you based it around a Dali painting. What is it? Christ of St. John. Tell me about that.
It's a love story about two young sisters who go to Spain in the 1950s, and one of them has been through a terrible trauma and is only just coming out. They've got a big age difference, and the younger one is much more boisterous and sort of confident, but the older one's in a terrible state. And the one thing she really loves is the surreal art, which at the time was really divisive thing. And they go to Spain and they end up in the area where this crazy artist Salvador Dali is painting. And they get involved in his painting of this famous picture, Christ of St. John on the Cross. Now, the reason I wanted this in the book is because I became a bit obsessed with it myself. It's in the Kelvin Grove. And I was told about it when I was filming Eggheads in Glasgow, because we had a Salvador Dali question: who invented the lobster telephone, which you would know. And I said, of course, he's an interesting artist. I know nothing about him. And they said, one of his famous paintings is down the road in the Kelvin Grove. So I went, and it's an amazing picture of Christ on the cross from above, based on a sketch done in the 1570s by a monk called St. John of the Cross. So my story is that essentially, although a stuntman posed it for Dali in real life, in my book, the stuntman walks out and he chooses, or really forces, a local waiter in a hotel to be the person who poses the painting. And it's going to destroy the waiter, and my heroine is in love with him. So that's it. And the reason I thought of that was because when I was in the gallery and I was looking at this painting thinking, this is unbelievable, I turned and saw on the wall this tiny little sticker which said that it was posed by a stuntman called Russell Saunders. And Dali said, you're going to have to hang from a gantry in the ceiling of my studio so I can see the effects of gravity on your body. So he actually hung the guy from his studio ceiling to do it. So that's what my book is based on. But it's a love story, really, about Spain in the 50s, which is a crazy place.
And you do love, have you read Shadow of the Wind?
No, tell me.
Oh, my God, you must. It's during the Civil War. And it's about this Shadow of the Wind. It's by...
I need to write this down. Okay, wait, I'm going to write it down.
And it's about this... His father has this library. It's called the Library of Lost Books. And it's all the orphaned books, of which there are millions and millions. And then in this library, without realizing, they have this incredibly valuable book, and it's how this young boy rescues this book, weaving his way through all the kind of chaos that's going on, and civil unrest and everything. And it's so exciting and so beautifully written and evocative of Spain at that time. So I think you'll really enjoy that.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, it's I think we all need stories these days, particularly as we're all still locked in a bit, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, how did you have the time to write it to start with?
I think it was before I started Channel 5, I had this idea of doing it, and I started bits and bobs, and then I was just filling spare moments. And somebody did say to me, a brilliant piece of advice, actually, is just keep writing. Now, I know that sounds really obvious, but it's often, if you'll know this, you're writing a book, often you open your laptop and you just read it instead of writing it. So you read what you've written already. You've got it. You've got to just, the bit you've done is done, and you're now going to go on to the next bit. and try and do 500, 1,000 words a day and just do bit by bit. I was writing it in cafes and stuff. I got really into it, actually. I really, really got into it. Yeah. Have I sent you a copy? Can I send you one?
No, please, please, really, because I really do
love
it. Because my last novel is, the story is set in London in 1979. And the backdrop for that is the emerging gay scene and the art world, which at that time it was like Baroque and Rococo was what was in fashion. And it's how this young girl finds her heritage and her through this painting that she gets restored. And
we both got a painting thing.
We both got a painting thing. Okay. But did you kind of like that thing of being alone when you wrote, or that thing of being, like, if you go to a cafe, this is just, I'm genuinely interested about this for the podcast. Did you like that thing of being alone, but not alone when you're in a cafe?
Yes, I do. I'm somebody who, I think the world does divide into people who can eat at a table for one and people who can't. And I can easily do a table for one. Yeah. And then sometimes I can be in a restaurant on my own, and I can see people thinking, is that guy ill, or has he got no friends, or, and I'm thinking, what is the problem here? Because I've got stuff going on, you know. But yeah. Some people feel it's really exposing, but I think I'm dancing on my own less so. I think that would be more problematic.
Yeah, maybe. But that's good. I'm about to start my third one, and I'm going up to this island in the Hebrides. And I've rented this little tiny bossy, which is two rooms, no electricity, no Wi-Fi, no phone.
No Wi-Fi.
I don't know if it has. So I've got to do all my research before, and I've got books and stuff.
Wow.
And have to chop my own wood. There is one running water. The shower's outside, and it's right on the sea. And I'll have no one there. I'm doing that for 3 weeks.
Okay. The only problem there would be if like in, not Desperate Housewives, but where you get somebody mowing the lawn and they look like the bloke in Poldark, and then there's a distraction.
I should be so bloody lucky. You know, fingers crossed.
Because there's so little going on in what you've described. I would worry about one single distraction. That would be, mind you, that could then be the book, couldn't it?
Could be the next one. So, well, I think that's it, apart from one final question, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got great hopes for the answer to this question. Okay, no more fibs.
It was true that. No, the belt was bad, but the joy of the belt and the black tie is they were both true. I promise that.
So what would be your birthday suit? What is your go-to? I want to, you stand out every day, but what is something that you really love to wear?
I've got a pair of crocodile shoes.
You have not.
They're not real crocodile, and that would be wrong. They are shoes that you would think were crocodile, because that is the proper patterning of them. And I have worn them once, and I am waiting for the right moment. And I keep seeing them, and it challenges me. Why has your life not included a crocodile shoe moment since 2001?
Wow. What shape are they? Do they have a buckle?
Yes, no, that's a good... They're so pointed, I think the word might be winkle, that
they appear in the room before me.
No, don't you know what I mean? That point that goes...
Yeah, no,
so
I know,
big.
I hate winkle shoes, but yeah.
Oh, really? They're uncomfortable, which is good.
That, yeah, it's good to join our club. But fantastic. And are they black or brown?
The actual skin, the serpent-like crocodile reptile skin is properly scaly, and it's got a selection of greens in it. So I think this crocodile was green. It might have eaten something. I didn't agree with it, but it looks crocodilian. Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. So
I can show you a photo of that.
Yeah. Please, will you send me a photograph of the shoes? I'm dying to see those. I'm dying. Right.
Okay. And then we'll find a moment where I can actually wear them.
Yeah, we'll find a moment. We'll find you something to wear with them, more to the point. Maybe it'll be your black tie and your belt. We're all together. Jeremy, you're just amazing, and I really wish you all the luck with your novel, The Cyber Lover.
Thank you.
Please send it to me.
I will. I'm going to today. I will go home and I've got stamps. They're going to send it.
All right, my love. Okay, thank you so very much. All right, take care.
Bye.
Thank you, Jeremy. I do hope you enjoyed spending time with him as much as I did. Right, before we go, a few quick reminders. First, our pyjama party, the place where you tell me all about your own clothing calamities. Find it on our website at mywardmal.com, and if you have a story you'd like to share, then email me at help@mywardmal.com. You can also find and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at mywardmal. And I'd be eternally grateful if you could rate and review us on your chosen podcast platform. That's it, nearly. Thanks to our masterly house band Duo. Find and buy their new album at duoguitarmusic.com or at Duo Guitar Music on their socials. Oh, and again, thank you, Jeremy. And of course, thanks to you for listening. Catch up soon. Until then, my wardrobe is officially closed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.